I want to welcome you once again and wish you good evening. I'm Jack Hopke. On our program tonight, as usual, actually, we'll have both the arts and some hard news. We'll have a Texan visual artist, a French jazz man, and first, unfortunately, a disappearing local newspaper. It's, of course, the New Orleans Times-Picayune, known for its Pulitzer Prize-winning coverage of Hurricane Katrina, announced this week that nearly half of the newsroom staff would be laid off. Newhouse Publications, which owns the paper, also announced that the Times-Pic will cease daily publication and shift to an online focus. All things considered, Melissa Block spoke with staffer Mark Schlifstein, who has been at the paper for 28 years.
And you are among the lucky ones, I gather. You still have your job, right?
I have been offered a position in the new corporation and am considering the offer.
Well, what was the scene like yesterday as so many of your friends and colleagues were called in and told they're gone?
I actually refer to it online as sort of Katrina without the water. It was very disconcerting and very emotional. There was a lot of crying and a lot of hugging, and people streamed in all day long to meet with individual editors who provided them with a packet that was either a job offer, like mine was, or was a severance package that gave them the news as to whether or not they would still be around.
There was a video posted online at NOLA.com by the paper's editor, Jim Amos, and he said that newspapers that don't serve a digital audience risk a slow death. Let's listen to some of what he said.
We won't retreat from our commitment to be a watchdog of local government. We won't retreat from doing significant investigative journalism. We won't retreat from being the dominant news source for our communities. Those are our promises, and we know that you'll hold us to them.
Mark Schlifstein, what do you make of those promises?
I'm hoping we're able to do that, or I'm hoping the new product is able to do that. We're really going to have to figure out whether or not we can keep our audience once they see what the products are that we're able to produce. And what those products are is what the real question is, and it's something that us in the newsroom still do not have a decent handle on. Jim Amos did tell me today that he is planning on having meetings with staffers this week in which he will provide them with more information and actually request their input into what those products should contain.
Is anybody there looking at other cities around the country that have gone to this model of three newspapers a week and have made it work?
We've been watching it elsewhere, whether it's in Michigan with, you know, the other Newhouse newspapers, or in places like Detroit where other companies have tried a similar sort of a strategy. I'm not quite sure that we're seeing success yet.
You know, a lot of people, Mark, will remember that during Katrina, the Times-Picayune was able to keep publishing under just heroic circumstances by its staff. What do you think it means to the city to not have a daily print newspaper anymore?
People are upset about. There's a lot of emotion about this idea that we're going to become a three-day-a-week kind of product. I don't know how we're going to be able to get over that as the new corporate entity goes forward. Is how do we keep our readers? How do we keep the public? How do we continue to provide them with the service that is news? And how do we also keep our advertisers happy in such a way that we're able to survive financially?
Mark Schlifstein, good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Mark Schlifstein is a reporter with the New Orleans Times-Picayune, which yesterday laid off 200 employees, including nearly half of the newsroom.
Now that Times-Picayune journalists have learned that half the newsroom staff is being cut, they have to return from being the news to reporting the news. Eileen Fleming tells of one staffer who is coping by trying to do the job at hand one day at a time.
Times-Picayune graphic artist Ryan Smith says he was told there would be no position for him in the digital format envisioned by owners Advance Publications. He's been at the paper since 2007. He was a finalist for the 2009 Pulitzer Prize for Local Reporting for contributing to a 2008 series focusing on one murder investigation. Smith says that while he was unhappy, it was some comfort to finally know where he stood.
In the past couple of weeks, it felt like years. And it was nice to know, but then the reality hits.
The paper announced last month that print editions would be produced only 3 times a week, starting in the fall. Smith says he hasn't made any definite employment plans, but he's getting tips on jobs from strangers on Facebook and Twitter.
This is the first time I've ever gone through looking for a job with social media, so it'll be a new endeavor.
Meantime, he says he still owes the readers his best efforts, and he doesn't want to disappoint those still fighting to keep the Times-Picayune a daily paper. One organizer says efforts are continuing to find another company willing to keep the Times-Picayune editions and staff at current levels. For WWNO, I'm Eileen Fleming.
And Eileen is a news staffer with this radio station. Finally, on the subject this evening, we'll turn our attention to the public's response to the situation. NPR's Debbie Elliott reports the change has sparked a general outrage here in New Orleans.
What happens when a media company wants to take away your daily newspaper? In New Orleans, you take to the streets. Bandleader Kermit Ruffins is among the high-profile musicians who headlined a recent rally to preserve daily publication. It's part of a campaign launched by New Orleans' most prominent citizens and powerful leaders who have rallied behind the Times-Picayune, a 175-year-old cultural institution in a city that gives high credence to tradition.
It's a morning ritual.
Constable Lambert Boissiere is a former city councilman and state senator.
You know, you get the paper, get your cup of coffee, have a little breakfast or whatever, and you're paging through reading articles you want to read. Then you had the conversations at lunch about what you read in the paper. You know, so that's going to be gone. I can't imagine myself and a lot of my friends sitting in front of a computer every morning to go through the different sections of the paper to read the articles. I don't see that happening.
More than a third of New Orleans residents don't have internet access, raising questions about how poorer and older citizens will keep up with news or even the local obituaries. Rituals aside, Boissiere says, the timing is terrible.
We finally cleaned up our acts since Katrina. We got business coming back, our athletics things with the Hornets and the Saints. We got a Super Bowl, we had Final Four, everything. We're getting to be a big city again. And then to lose a daily paper, I think it's a bad signal for, you know, affecting the growth of the city.
And that's what concerns civic leaders who have banded together to put pressure on the Newhouse Company to rethink their plan. New Orleans Mayor Mitch Landrieu says the city's reputation is at stake.
You know, if you go from 7 days to 3 days, do you look like a minor league city?
I fully grasp the grief over what people think will no longer be there.
Times-Picayune editor and native New Orleanian Jim Amos. He says the organization will continue to do justice by the community.
And I know these are just words at this point. Our intention is to preserve the news report, the investigative journalism, our chasing after corruption in Louisiana.
Amos says economic upheaval in the news industry is something that every regional newspaper must confront.
The one way we have chosen not to come to terms with it is by simply atrophying, by watching our print ad revenue, which is still strong, erode year by year as it will and as it has, and by having to chop off limb after limb of our news gathering strength without having any strategy going forward.
But if this week's layoffs are any indication, 200 in New Orleans and 400 in Alabama, more than a few limbs have been amputated.
My name is John McCusker, and I've been a staff photographer at the Times-Picayune since 1986.
McCusker lost his job in the restructuring. I spoke with him outside a local bar where laid-off workers met to commiserate.
The main thing is I'm sad for this city. You take away the Times-Picayune, and there are a bunch of police officers that were on the Danziger Bridge that would still be on the streets today. Take away the Times-Picayune and Aaron Broussard is still president of Jefferson Parish. The watchdog role of this newspaper cannot be underestimated.
He's talking about how reporters exposed corrupt politicians and even a police plot to cover up civilian killings after Katrina. The paper's storm coverage earned a Pulitzer Prize. Restaurateur Ralph Brennan is part of a group of Times-Picayune advertisers considering whether to pull their spending in protest. He's disheartened by the list of seasoned journalists who are leaving, including the paper's restaurant critic.
They have an outstanding staff. Many of them have been there a long time. Brett Anderson's one of them. And, you know, Brett has a national reputation. He's very well respected in the food journalism community. And to lose him is a great loss. And this is a food city.
One Picayune punch.
Brennan's restaurants are serving special drinks like this, with a portion of proceeds going to help those who lost their jobs. He and other business leaders are now looking for alternatives.
I keep hoping that somebody, an entrepreneur out there, will find a way to get us some daily news and maybe build a newspaper.
Three-day publication is set to take effect in the fall. Debbie Elliott, NPR News, New Orleans.
More information about the developing story at the Times-Picayune can be found online at nola.com/t-p. I'm Jack Hopke. You're listening to All Things New Orleans on this Thursday, June 14th. You can listen to our features at any time at wwno.org. It's all archived there with many of the other items from WWNO. All Things New Orleans continues. For most people, music is an audible experience. However, one visual artist is providing a new focus for sounds that influence and cross generations. Diane Mack speaks with the man behind the New Orleans Museum of Art's latest exhibit, The Pre-Lives of the Blues.
It's a different understanding of having music in your life.
Conceptual artist Dario Robleto sees music in a physical way.
I've never just understood a rock or pop song as an audible experience. Whenever I got home with my new record, it was immediately a visual experience. It was a text-based experience. I'm a huge liner notes fan, lyric sheets. Even the way the record felt and smelled, all of this informed my understanding of the song as music. So over the years, I've tried to find how to bring that understanding of music into the sculptural realm.
In his solo exhibition, The Pre-Lives of the Blues, Robleto, a native of San Antonio, Texas, tackles what he calls his sculptural problem by exploring the idea of how we become who we are through our family's musical decisions.
I like to talk about it this way. If you could break down everybody's life from the moment of conception to the day you buy your first album with your own money, my argument is that if your mother listened to Patsy Cline for 9 months while you're in the womb, perhaps we have less say in who we think we become than we like to admit to ourselves. So, and I think that can sometimes show up on that day when you buy your first record with your own money. It's like the first time of independence, just kind of displaying your own independence. But perhaps things were more set than you realized. And then how that then gets passed down generation to generation. So the show is trying to think of a family tree or a family line and how we're all linked through previous musical decisions. Grandmother, mother, son, on and on.
Robleto manipulates select vinyl records, album covers, liner notes, even audio tape, into sculptures, works on paper, and photographs. As he explores the physicality of music in our lives, allowing us to see the emotional significance of jazz, rock and roll, and the blues through a generational timeline. Highlights include a pair of male and female pelvises made from his parents' powderized and melted vinyl records. It's called The Sin Was in Our Hips.
Lord Almighty, I feel my temperature rising.
That is dealing with my endless fascination with my parents' generation of understanding rock and roll and how radical it was to see Elvis's hips moving, or Chuck Berry, or Little Richard, just the physicality of the music, and how that affected a whole generation's understanding of who they were, especially that their dance moves could actually be sinful, I find just fascinating.
Another work, Melancholy Matters Because of You, explores hand bones made from three generations of melted vinyl records.
And this is a piece that is dealing with human hand bones at a fetal, adolescent, and adult stage. In the womb, you know, as a little hand is starting to form all the way on its way to adulthood, there's no way to get away from the fact that in our bones are perhaps decisions our grandmother made about a music taste that she had years ago.
And a New Orleans-inspired work, Will the Sun Remember It All?, isolates stage lights from live album covers.
That was sort of my imagining a musical portrait of the city through three lineages of music that have tight relationships to the city, but just through the stage lights that once illuminated those singers. Because all those lights that once illuminated those singers on stage are themselves emanating out into the night sky and on their way somewhere. And so I'm playing off that idea of the way light travels and how long it takes to get somewhere. So of course, you know, a light that illuminated Etta James decades ago is somewhere still on its way to another star. It's a romantic notion of thinking that somewhere everybody's still alive, if you imagine those lights representing them.
Robleto is hoping you'll find music to be more than an audible experience. Dario Robleto's The Pre-Lives of the Blues is on view at the New Orleans Museum of Art through September 16th. Inside the Arts for 89.9 WWNL, I'm Diane Mack.
More information about the New Orleans Museum of Art and Dario Robleto's exhibit can be found online at noma.org, N-O-M-A.org. Music remains our subject here on All Things New Orleans on this Thursday evening, jazz specifically, which has evolved into a genre of music that incorporates many distinctive styles. Since it began on the streets of our city here, oh, about a century ago or so, often the key to its evolution is cross-cultural cooperation. On this week's Notes from New Orleans, we'll hear from the leader of a French jazz group that has returned to Louisiana in pursuit of his persistent desire to collaborate.
It's always interesting to ask musicians what the word jazz means to them. Is it one kind of music, a certain rhythm, the spirit?
Oh, for me, jazz is not music, it's an attitude, in the way of playing music, you know. It's an open mind, it's friendship.
That's one French musician's explanation. Emmanuel de Gouvello is in New Orleans, a city he loves, to play music. A special kind, the result of a collaboration with Greyhawk Perkins, a Native American of the Choctaw and Houma nations. Together, they will create something completely original. After almost a week of rehearsal, Emmanuel de Gouvello and his band Mezcal Jazz Unit will premiere the work at Club Istanbul this Friday night. Then they'll take it to Lafayette on Sunday and Mandeville on Monday. A resident of Montpellier in the south of France, Emmanuel is a well-known composer, bandleader, and bass player of his small ensemble. More than anything, he loves to work with other cultural groups to create new jazz sounds, even though he sometimes doesn't quite know how it will turn out.
Oh, sometimes I don't know how I can do this thing. For example, we did something in Nigeria, Africa, because I had one of my brother who is a diplomat, and he was in Nigeria, so I had opportunity to come there And we played in a festival and we met some local artists. And we had the idea to do something, but the music was very ethnical and not easy to get ideas about that. But it always comes. If you want, it comes.
In New Orleans, Emmanuel and Greyhawk are working on a project they call 13 Moons, a reference to the 13 moons of the traditional Native American calendar. Emmanuel will create arrangements of Greyhawk's compositions, which are based on traditional chants. For the French group, it is an exciting look into a culture they know about only from old movies and television.
The project was amazing for us because we have fascination for the Indian world. Because it's a kind of philosophy, and it's Native American. It's very fascinating for us. The fascination was not for the Indian music, because we don't know really. It's for the Indian world.
Mezcal Jazz Unit has been around for 25 years, and they have created their own distinct style. Much of what they play is written by Emmanuel, and for one night only, New Orleanians will have a chance to hear that too.
On Saturday, we're playing in the Snug Arbor, where we have played already last year. It's a very nice place. What kind of music are we playing there? We are playing our own music, so it's a mix of old and new composition. I think we are going to play in trio this time. New Orleans is a special place for us, of course, because it's the birthplace of jazz, so it's... I talked about fascination about Indians, but it's the same thing about New Orleans, you know. In France, we are following the series Treme. We like it very much. It's incredible. And last year, we followed the first season, and we came in New Orleans, and we played in Snug Arbor. We have seen in the series, it was fantastic, you know. And we feel the same feeling, you know, when we look at Treme, the series, again. Yeah, we've been there, and it was like that, you know. It's amazing.
For more information about Mezcal Jazz Unit, go to WWNO.org or NOLAVIE.com. For WWNO, I'm Sharon Litwin.
Mezcal Jazz Unit will perform around Louisiana this coming weekend, beginning tomorrow evening at Café Istanbul on St. Claude Avenue. More information available online at mezcaljazzunit.com. Please don't forget you can revisit our features anytime at WWNO.org. And, of course, you are invited back next week for the first summer session of our program, All Things New Orleans, of which I, Jack Hopke, am your host and producer, associate producer of ATNO and editor as well. It's our colleague Thomas Walsh. The program is a production of WWNO News.